Today is November 11th, 2006, and this is the Weekly Roundup, a Mac Observer podcast. I'm Ricky Spiro.
And I'm Jeff Gamet. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/roundup. Video card maker NVIDIA has agreed to purchase Portal Player, the company best known for the chips it manufactured for Apple's iPod. The deal will cost NVIDIA $357 million in cash.
And that is going to be the first story in the Context Machine Fodder. Earlier this year, Apple started moving away from Portal Player's system-on-a-chip processors for the iPod product line. Apple's decision dealt a serious blow to Portal Player's bottom line, since an estimated 70% of the company's revenue came from iPod chip sales.
NVIDIA plans to use Portal Player's technology to improve its position in the handheld product market.
And there's plenty of other Context Machine fodder this week. Microsoft has struck a deal with several networks to bring TV programming and movies to the Xbox 360. That's 360 what? Degrees? Would you like to tell us? Maybe 360, 360.
How about a gaming console?
Oh, I see. I thought it was hours of rehab after a Halo binge.
Well, for some people, yes.
Microsoft has struck a deal to bring TV programming to the Xbox 360 gaming console. Programming from CBS, MTV Networks, Paramount Pictures, Turner Broadcasting System, Ultimate Fighting Championship, and Warner Brothers will offer standard and high-definition shows and movies for download via the internet starting on November 22nd. Sorry, that's always ticked me off that they use 360 and don't tell you what. I'm a huge nerd. By the end of the year, Microsoft's TV show download library should include CSI, Survivor, and the remastered Star Trek episodes, South Park, SpongeBob, SquarePants, Skyland, and more. The movie selection will include Mission Impossible 3, Nacho Libre, The Matrix, Superman Returns, Batman Forever, and some other stuff.
TV shows will be available as individual purchases, much like Apple's iTunes Store, but movies will be rental downloads only. Now, Microsoft has not said how much the shows will cost and what the rental terms will include or what other types of restrictions will be placed on the digital content. Presumably, shows downloaded to the Xbox 360 will not play on any other devices.
And speaking of Microsoft and portable media, Zune. Interesting story this week. Some 58% of current iPod owners who are planning to buy a new digital media device in the next 12 months are likely, according to this survey, to choose Microsoft's Zune. This is according to a survey published by ABI Research. The firm conducted its survey on the web, asking about 1,700 adults if they were considering buying a new music player.
The survey also found that only 15% of iPod owners said they were not very likely or not at all likely to choose Zune. The survey was conducted in October of 2006, and survey participants were shown an image of the Zune before being asked their likelihood of choosing it over another device.
Now, when asked, ABI Research told iPod Observer that the study and the related survey were not commissioned or sponsored by any outside firms. So all research was done by ABI Research, for ABI Research, and that is the Context Machine fodder. Getting into the Context Machine, Jeff, let's start with Portal Player and NVIDIA. Certainly the story, at least to me, that seems to have the greatest impact going forward here. Let's begin with what NVIDIA is looking to do here. What kind of products might they be looking to make now that they were assuming that this merger goes through, passes regulatory approval and goes through?
I think what NVIDIA is looking for is a way to be able to make a total package that other companies can buy and use as a foundation for handheld devices. And those handheld devices can take any form. Presumably, they'll be able to handle multimedia in some fashion. So I think we're looking at devices that that people are going to carry around to play movies, listen to music, and have a richer multimedia experience than we get right now from the current crop of handheld media devices. So in one respect, you could think true video iPod. I think that's the type of products they're looking to make out of this deal.
Now, we talked a couple of weeks ago about AMD purchasing ATI. This is a chip maker, a normal computer central processing unit maker, CPU maker, buying a graphics process maker, ATI. Now, how is that deal, the AMD-ATI merger, how is that similar or different from the NVIDIA Portal Player deal?
Actually, I think the two deals parallel each other in that you have these companies that are purchasing other chip makers, and now they can bundle an all-in-one solution. And if you look at what Intel is doing, like with the MacBook product, you have the processor, the video processor, and all the other subsystems that are bundled together as a package. Apple buys that and builds the MacBook out of it. That's what we're looking at from these type of deals, where we're going to have one company that can give you a whole bundle that becomes the platform for whatever your next product will be.
Now, you're saying that they parallel one another nicely. The exact parallel, I suppose, would have been Intel buying NVIDIA. Is there... this might be a dumb question in the sense that why didn't it happen? It didn't happen because it didn't happen and this happened instead. But why, since some people may be sitting there saying, well, we saw AMD buy ATI, why isn't Intel buying NVIDIA? Is there is that a sensible question, or is there a sensible answer to it?
Well, sure, it's a sensible question. And for those people sitting at home thinking about it, well, good for you. I think the reason that you don't see Intel jumping up to go run out and buy NVIDIA is because Intel has its own roadmap that it's already laid out that involves its own graphics processing technology. And so they're taking their own route through this little chip quagmire we're in right now. AMD, on the other hand, they didn't have a whole solution that they could offer. And I don't think they were in the position to be able to reinvent the video end of things, but they were in a position where they could do this merger and end up creating that all-in-one package that Intel is already offering. Now, some people are going to say, well, yeah, but when AMD picked up ATI, they picked up a powerhouse video graphics company, and Intel doesn't have that. And you're absolutely right. But these are different approaches that the companies are taking. They have their own tactics, and I think in the end, it'll play out in a way that works well for everyone, because AMD will have this two-pronged approach that will help them stay in business. Intel will follow with its kind of all-in-one, one-pronged approach that will work well for it. And then we'll have companies like NVIDIA that are now providing these alternate platforms that we can use for smaller computing devices. So we'll end up with this nice environment for the companies to choose from. And by companies, I mean the companies that are going to make the end products that we all use.
Now, and it does sound, when you look at the areas where the chip makers and the graphics chip makers are looking to work together more closely, it sounds repeatedly like this is in the portable market. Intel is making their own graphics stuff for the MacBook in this case. Portal Player and NVIDIA working together on portable media devices. AMD and ATI were... we talked a couple weeks ago, looking to make a single chip that had both the graphics and central processing unit. And we were saying, well, that would be very useful in terms of power consumption and other things, very useful for portable media. It's also worth saying, it seems, that if you step back from this, the the powerhouse market, where you have a CPU in a tower desktop that has its own big honking graphics card that sits in a PCI Express slot, that's not going away. And Intel will continue to work with NVIDIA and ATI, now that it's folded into AMD, will continue to work with those companies to make sure that their big honking graphics cards, expansion cards for computers, will continue to work across the board.
Yes, absolutely. Perfect. I don't even have to elaborate on that. You totally got it right.
All right. Now let's talk a little bit about Xbox and TV shows. I'm so proud of myself.
I'm so proud of you too.
Now, on the face of it, this whole thing, selling TV shows over the internet, they show up on an Xbox. Let's look at this in this fashion. This looks great to me for Microsoft. A lot of people have Xboxes, right? A lot of them, most of them presumably, are plugged into TVs. And the Xbox, in many ways, is designed to be an internet gaming device. So presumably a lot of those are connected to the internet as well, a lot of those Xboxes. So this seems like a good installed base for Microsoft to say, well, let's go and sell them TV shows. They'll play them out through their TV. How likely do you feel this is to catch on?
You know, I don't know if it's going to catch on or not. The Xbox 360, it really is a nice product. And it shows that Microsoft really did let the people that are designing the product do their thing, because there's so many things about it that are not Microsoft-ish. Now, with that said, it is still Microsoft, and there's no way to get around some of the Microsoft philosophy and way of doing things. My fear is that they are doing, as they have done with some other products, taking a really good idea and then really kind of jacking it up. And, you know, we haven't seen how this plays out yet, because you can't actually get the movies yet. But once you can, I have a feeling people are going to have responses similar to when Unbox from Amazon was unveiled, where they went, wow, this is a great idea. And then a few days later, they're going, I wish they did it like Apple. And I have a feeling that's what we'll end up with here, because I know it's going to end up using the same thing that Microsoft is already doing for purchases. You know, they have this whole Microsoft credit system where you buy credits and then use those credits to purchase other things. And it adds this whole extra layer of complexity to the mix. And I'm sure that we'll probably get emails from people saying, look, I use my Xbox all the time. I use the Microsoft credit thing, and it's never been a problem. But the fact of the matter is, this is an extra step that you have to go through to be able to get the product. And so you have to buy something so you can buy something. And that's just kind of funky and weird to me. And I think we're going to see that there will be glitches with the system, and Microsoft will have to work those out. Some people will be happy to sit by and wait while they're fixed, because they're okay with something that's just good enough. But then we'll have a lot of people that are going to go, you know, they just aren't doing it the way Apple would, and I wish that they could. So I think it'll be an okay thing, but in the long run, it's not going to be something that really overtakes what Apple's doing with the iTunes Store.
I get the sense that there's also something with Microsoft products of this kind. I'm going to tell you a short story, you and all the listeners out there, a short story. About a month ago, I think, we did a show where we talked about Amazon's Unbox and we talked about iTunes, but we didn't really talk much about the Unbox because we said, you know, or about Unbox because we said the product sucks. You can't move it around the way we wanted to. The buying experience is no good, and you won't be able to play it out over to your TV like you will be able to once Apple's iTV product comes out. And so in the description of the show, I said something about how only Apple has the full package for delivering home movies. Now, after we posted that show, we got a note from a tech writer for a newspaper on the West Coast who said, what are you talking about? He said, what do you mean by full package? We downloaded a show from Amazon's Unbox and we played it over our TV. Well, it turns out that what he had done was he downloaded something, the Windows Media Edition, on his PC from Unbox, and he had streamed it over the home media extender that you can put on your Xbox. Did you ever know that this existed, Jeff?
No, actually, I didn't.
Now, I had never heard of it, and so I had this phone conversation with this fine gentleman, and I said, well, how did you do that? And he was describing the process. He said it was really quite straightforward. It just showed up on this home media edition extender that played on the Xbox, and it worked. It didn't work the first time, but it worked the second time, and after that, it seemed pretty straightforward. Well, I'll be, right? Microsoft has solved this problem already, and I had never heard of it. And I work in this. I mean, you haven't heard of it. I hadn't heard of it. Dave Hamilton hadn't heard of it. None of us knew that this thing existed. And we work in this industry.
if none of the three of us had heard of this product, then it is not something that's marketed very well. Because you would think, with the involvement that you, I, and Dave have in this industry, at least one of us would have known about this little magic extender thing.
Now,
and it's news to me.
This is the thing. Microsoft has solved many problems out there, and they're going to, solve a TV downloading problem, apparently, with the Xbox. One of the things that I expect is going to happen is the same thing that happened, apparently, with Media Extender for the Xbox, where it might exist, but it won't be either obvious that it is there, they won't tell anybody about it, or if they do tell anyone about it, people will just say, oh, it's some Windows movie whatever thing, I don't really pay attention to it. So does it seem reasonable to you, just in the sense that Microsoft adds so many features that they pile all this stuff on, they say, hey, we have a product that does this, and it has all these bells and whistles, but you can't kind of see through the features to the functionality. No one ever sits down and says, oh, wait a minute, I can buy TV shows and play them on my TV effortlessly with my Xbox.
You know, what you're talking about now is the difference in philosophy between Microsoft and Apple when it comes to designing products. And Apple goes for the more straightforward, streamlined, and elegant approach. Microsoft tends to go for the more of a, let's call it a bull in a china shop approach, where they just kind of mash the whole product out in some awkward fashion. And if you look at both companies, that's exactly what we're talking about right here, right now. And I think when Apple's iTV, whatever it's ultimately called, hits the shelves, and we look at what it does compared to an Xbox 360 with this little media add-on thing, people are going to go, wow, okay, so I can have an Xbox and do all these things, but I have to jump through all these hoops to get something that's good enough. Or I can get Apple's iTV and have this elegant, easy, seamless solution to add my digital content to my home entertainment system, but I give up the video games. And then someone will say, oh, wait, look, there's a plug on the back of here I can hook my Xbox up to.
Yeah, and we will, of course, see what happens when ITV comes out, or whatever it's called when it does come out. That will be interesting to watch. One last question about Microsoft, this survey about iPod owners in Zune. Now, what happens here is apparently people were shown a picture of the Zune. I don't know if they were told this is the Zune or this is a new product from Microsoft, but one way or another, they were informed this product exists. And then
right.
they were asked, well, when you buy your next media player, do you think you're likely to buy this one or buy the iPod? What's going on here? 58% of iPod owners are thinking about buying a Zune?
Not at all. Actually, I think these numbers are very misleading. And actually, to be honest with you, my first thought when I saw this information was that Microsoft had commissioned this study. And so Brian Chafin actually called the company and said, what's up with this? And they said, no, we actually did this ourselves. This is what we wanted to do. So much to my surprise, Microsoft wasn't involved. Okay, now with that off and out of the way, if you look at the numbers, what they were looking at was a percentage, 58% of a subset of people that are looking at purchasing some type of media player in the next year, I think is what it is. And of this subset of people, there's a percentage of them that are currently iPod owners. So if you look at what the numbers are actually showing, and since I don't have access to all of the data, I can't tell you what those numbers would really be, but it's a lot lower than this 58% number that they started throwing around. And without actually having the real numbers in front of me, I would speculate to say we're talking about something that's well under 20% and maybe even well under 10%.
At a minimum, it does seem likely that if you're shown a different product and someone says, I know you're planning on buying a media player, how about this one? That there'd be a bias in the number of people that say, well, yeah, I saw that thing. That looks, sure, I'll take a look at that. If people are planning on buying sometime in the next year, it's more a question of, would you look at this product? Would you take a closer look at this product when you go to buy your next media player?
Right. And we don't know if they said, so you're looking at getting a media player. Look at this. Does this look like something you would consider? And then people went, well, yeah. Or did they say, so you're looking at getting a media player. Would you consider getting this? Or are you going to stick with an iPod? And those are two very different questions, which most likely would elicit different responses from the same people.
That does make sense. And that'll be the final word, kind of a polling context machine to wrap up the political season, I suppose.
Yes, indeed.
If you have questions or thoughts about the news, go ahead and send them to roundup@macobserver.com. We're here. We're reading them. That's it for the context machine.
Okay, let's do the product roundup. And Ricky, I want to point out that you do sound a little bit different this week. So tell us what mic you're using.
Well, I do. I have switched mics. We got a little goodie bag from Shure this week with some interesting looking product in it. This is another Shure microphone. I talked 2 weeks ago about the SM58. This is the SM7B, as in beta. SM7B mic. It's a broadcast microphone. It retails officially, if you go and look at the retail price, it's something over $600. It actually online, if you look at the online retailers, it's more like $350, which is, of course, expensive. I think it's certainly at the very high end of what most podcasters are looking for. But it is an interesting thing to compare with. To give you an idea of what this thing is, it's a boom mic is probably the best way to describe it. If you've ever seen the set of a movie where they have those microphones that are coming down, they've got them on long stalks and they kind of hang into the scene. That long stalk is the boom, and so you put this mic at the end of the boom. Or alternatively, if you've seen, speaking of the political season, if you've seen press conferences, very often in a press conference, if there's no podium with microphones on it, you'll see microphones on these long booms kind of hanging up in front of people's faces. That's the boom mic, and this is one of those classic shaped mics. It's a dynamic microphone like the SM58, but it's actually, it's interesting. I plugged it in. It runs very low. I'm actually having trouble getting enough signal out of it. So hopefully everybody's voice will sound balanced when I finally mix down the show. But it's an interesting thing. I mean, the concept behind it. Randy, who is a listener on the show, sent in this note last week and said, "Hi, Ricky, I love the show. I never miss it. My preference for your voice is the condenser microphone you used on the most recent one." And by the way, that's the Samson CL8, which we reviewed last week. "Maybe it's just a matter of equalizing, but your voice sounds really bass heavy on the dynamic mic." He's talking about the SM58. "You sound more natural, but it still sounds heavy and muddy on this mic." This mic being the Samson CL8. He says, "You sound clearer on the condenser mic, more natural, Mobetta."
Mobetta, you say?
Mobetta. So hopefully the idea behind a microphone like this one, the SM7B, is that it will have that punch at the bottom end that you get from the SM58, but should have the clarity, or at least more of the clarity, of the condenser mic, so that it's a little bit easier to discern my sibilance.
Well, alrighty then.
So I'm curious if you have, Jeff, if you have any reaction to how this thing sounds.
It does sound a little bit different than what you were using last week. And this is like something that's more of a middle ground between the two microphones that you've used so far, I would say.
Fair enough. And we won't yammer on about it too long. I'm going to take a listen to the show afterwards and hear what it sounds like. And I may actually use this next week as well if I listen to it and I say, I did something kind of weird, or I think about how to use this and decide that there's a better way to do it. But if you have thoughts about them, again, send them to roundup@macobserver.com. We're curious what you think about where we sound good. There was also one other thing about microphones. Jeff, we were talking about your mic at the beginning of the show, before the
show.
Yes,
that's right. And we were discussing the fact that we're getting some clipping off of the Samson CO3U. And the interesting thing, which we're waiting to hear what Samson has to say about this, is that it seems to be dynamically adjusting the gain. And I have to be very careful where I sit in position to the microphone and monitor exactly what's happening with the gain, because it's sliding that up on me all the time, which ends up creating the situations where we're getting the clipping. And that's where you hear the clicking type sounds where my voice is cutting out.
Yeah, and very often it just kind of goes crack, 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 whenever when he's talking. So if you guys have been wondering what that is, that's what that is. For some reason, that it's a USB microphone. We talked about it, I think, 3 weeks ago, and that's what's going on there. So we're going to try and figure that out and see if there's a way to prevent it from doing that. We'll get back to you on that next week, and I suppose that'll do for discussion of mics.
Well, okay. Then I'm going to move on to AMD's new announcement, which is the ATI Radeon X1900 G5 Mac Edition video card. They announced that on Monday. This PCI Express video card is compatible with the PowerMac G5 and includes 256 megabytes of video RAM and can deliver over 37 gigabytes of memory bandwidth per second. And that card costs $350.
And so apparently ATI will continue to release standalone graphics cards. Apple updated its MacBook product lineup on Wednesday with Intel Core 2 Duo processors. The new MacBooks support up to 2 gigabytes of RAM and up to a 200 gigabyte hard drive. Apple claims the new MacBooks are up to 25% faster than the models they replace. They come in three standard configurations priced between $1,100 and $1,500. And we talked a while ago, this was now a couple months ago, about the 64-bit revolution in computers and the fact that Apple was probably going to be the first computer manufacturer to have an entirely 64-bit product line. And, of course, the MacBook getting the Core 2 Duo. That means the MacBook Pro, the iMac, and of course the Mac Pro. That leaves only the Mac Mini as a non 64-bit computer. So it may be that you know, within the next 6 months, we're looking at an entirely 64-bit Mac product lineup around the time, I would suspect, of the release of Leopard.
I would venture to say that we will see a Core 2 Duo Mac Mini before that. So we'll see which one of us is right.
Right on.
Okay, and Aspyr Media announced on Tuesday that The Sims 2 Pets for the Mac is available now. This expansion pack for The Sims 2 lets your Sims raise pets and experience... what the hell?
That was a moment of my writing, an experience for which you'll have to pony up $35. Right. So Jeff, we're just gonna cruise on.
Let's just do that.
One of my nice writing moments. And finally this week, everybody, John Braun, TMO's resident gadget freak, reviews a fancy memory stick called the Jump Drive Mercury. Misha Sakularopoulou reviewed the new iPod Shuffle. And Jeff reviewed Miglia's TV Mini HD, which uses Elgato's iTV software. That's EYE TV software, and we talked about that on a different show.
And thank you very much for covering for me and my apparently broken tongue. And that's the news. Thanks for listening to Weekly Roundup.
Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer, with the occasional interesting addition from yours truly. Our bandwidth is provided by Cashfly, the basis by Boom for TMO. And that is all I've got this week.
And stay subscribed.
Until next week, everyone, we'll see you online.